So tonight, we are up to, if you see the page that says Ted Zion, we are up to Siv Zion at the top of the page. Particularly fascinating topic of what exactly a borrower violates if he borrows money and then does not pay back when he has the ability to do so. We've already seen that there is a mitzvah of paying back on time, right? That we've already discussed. We talked about what the root of that mitzvah might be. That's already old news. But now the question is, let's say the person has the ability to pay back and does not do so, or stalls, really, is what we're dealing with. Stalls in doing so. What has that person violated? So take a look at Siv Zion at the top of the page.
So is this before the due date?
This is at the due date.
At the due date,
correct. We already said that there is no obligation to pay early.
Right.
You have the means, that's nice, but there's no obligation. So, Asur halovel lichbosh ul'akev mamon chaveiro. A borrower is not allowed to withhold. Lichbosh is a term we use often to conquer. But the idea is simply to hold on to. And lachev, again, is to hold on to similarly, to keep back his friend's property. You can't hold on to that which somebody else has. V'kol shekin kishiyesh lo b'dochehu b'lech v'sho. And certainly, if you have the money to pay back, and you push the guy off and say, listen, come back tomorrow. Right, go away, come back tomorrow. Then he says, you're not allowed to do. V'meino pareya machmas ilmus or almus. And if he doesn't pay back, because he is powerful. In other words, it's not that I can't pay back, but he has no way to force me. So I said, great, I'll pay back when I feel like it. So in that case, over mishum lo sa'ashok, then one who would do that would be guilty of violating the prohibition called lo sa'ashok. Lo sa'ashok, do not corrupt, do not oppress. So what we're going to discuss for tonight in the footnotes, starting with footnote Tezvav, is the question of what prohibition exactly this person has violated. When you say asur, right, it appeals to me ethically, right? Of course you're violating something by not paying back on time. And certainly when you have the means to do so, it's not even like there's some reason why you can't. But where's the pasuk? What exactly have you violated? And we'll see a few different options. So looking at footnote Tes Vav, we get one view.
It also begs the question that if you're breaching a general obligation, it's not a contract anymore, then somebody could take you to the Beis Din even if that wasn't owed the money.
I don't understand what you mean.
You would still be committing I don't know what you'd be committing, but if it was a general obligation.
What do you mean by general obligation?
What's the reverse? What are we talking about here?
Here I borrowed money.
So do not oppress meaning what?
That's a prohibition against oppressing somebody in business.
Meaning a mitzvah.
We'll I'm sorry?
Meaning a mitzvah.
Right, well, it's a prohibition.
A prohibition.
Right. It's a lo sa'ase, right? It's a don't do.
Right.
But yes, it's a certain type of mitzvah. If you take a look at your sheet at Source Aleph, it's a good place to start at the side sheet. Welcome back, Brian. That's it. No one else can join. I've maxed out all the sheets. Well, that's all right. Right now, I don't have anybody else. But Source Aleph is a pasuk in Mishlei. Al tomar l'reacha lech vashuv umachar etein v'yesh itach. Don't tell your friend, go and come back, and tomorrow I'll give you, when you have the means all along. Right? That's the pasuk in Mishlei. It's a very straight statement of our law. Right? Don't tell somebody come back tomorrow when in fact you have the means to pay him today.
Do we use Mishlei as a makom of psak?
Ah, so that's a very good question. Mishlei is in Ksuvim, right? It's in the writings.
The other question.
Right? Mishlei is Proverbs. So
is this taken in context?
This pasuk, well, Mishlei to a certain extent lends itself to being taken out of context, because in Mishlei very often we hop. There are a few sections that are theme based, but very often you'll hop from statement to statement. So yes, that's a fair statement of the quote. It's not doing violence to Mishlei.
Pasuk 28 of
Right, no, that's true.
They're disparate psukim. I've read it. It's like every thought is a separate, every pasuk is a separate thought.
Right, it depends on the section of Mishlei. Some sections really have a theme, and some sections are, you know, Polonius' speech in, you know, neither a borrower nor a lender be, and so on, in Shakespeare. But yes, now this is a fair statement of the thought in Mishlei. It directly applies to our situation. But in terms of Gerald's question of, since when does the Book of Proverbs have halachic status? The answer is, hang in, we'll see. But that's the pasuk. But I want to go a little further with this, because the Pesach HaChoshen is going to quote something we need the background on first. So take a look at source Beis on the side sheet. It's a Gemara in Bava Metzia. Tanu Rabbanan. The sages teach this is a brisa, contemporary to the Mishnah, but not canonized in the Mishnah. Mimash mashenemar lo salin piulas sachir itcha eni yodeya she'ad boker. There's a pasuk in the Torah which says lo salin piulas sachir itcha ad boker. Do not keep the payment for a worker with you until morning. If someone is a day laborer, he's supposed to be paid every day. Don't keep a salary with you until morning. So the Gemara is bothered, because you really could have stopped the sentence after the word itcha. You could have said, don't keep his salary with you. Right? Ever. And then why do I need the words until morning? What does until morning add? Matam alomar ad boker. What do you need with the words ad boker, until morning? To which he answers what I think is a fairly obvious answer. Melameid she'eno over ela ad boker rishon bilvad. This teaches that you're not in violation unless you hold it until the first morning. In other words, let's say he knocked off of work at 7 o'clock in the evening, and I paid him at 10 o'clock that night. I'm not in violation. That's number one. Number two, it's a one-time violation. I only violate this pasuk when morning starts, however you want to define morning, because Jews can debate that forever. Right? Is it first light? Is it dawn? What do you want to call morning? However, at whatever time you pinpoint and say, that is morning, you have violated the prohibition, and then it's over. Whether you hold on to it for one day or 10 days or a month, it doesn't make a difference. You violated the prohibition once. That's what it sounds like. So the Gemara then asks, Mikan ve'elech mai? Well then, what further prohibition is there? Or, to put it differently, is there any incentive at this point, once I missed the first morning, is there any incentive to pay back soon? Or should I just say, well, it's too late. I broke the law anyway. Nothing further is going to happen to me. So I'll never pay him. Right? That's the Gemara's question. You follow?
Has a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is it for sure that this is interpreted as referring to only the first time, or can it be argued that it's referring to the principle of when the work is finished, then you must pay. And every time you do that, every time you hold it back, it accumulates. Each time is different.
Right. So that is true. That is true. In other words, each successive day that he works for you and you don't pay him is a unique violation. But my question is, what about the payment from day one? He worked for me on August 1st. So what they are taking here is that it really is only that first time. Once you waited until August 2nd, now, at this point, it's over. You broke the law. There is no further breakage of the law. That's what it sounds like until we get to the next line of the Gemara. Yes?
How is it saying that? Apart from every morning. Each day is a day, then the next day is another morning.
Yeah,
every next day is another violation.
Because it's a very literal read of the pasuk. The pasuk itself says, don't keep the payment of the laborer with you until morning. So once I've kept it, I violate the prohibition. There's nothing to indicate to me that it's multiple mornings. When the Torah wants to say multiple mornings, it generally says something like baboker, baboker. You know, it gives me some indication that there's going to be a daily process. Here we don't get anything like that. Don't worry, you're not allowed to keep it longer, and you are violating something. The question is what? So the Gemara continues, still in source base. Mikan ve'elech mai. What happens after the first day? So Amar Rav, over mishum bal tashhe. Rav says, well, then you're in violation of bal tashhe. Bal tashhe means not to keep. Okay? Meaning, don't keep the money with you. I've invented a brand new prohibition. There's a prohibition of don't keep it overnight. And then there's an extended prohibition of don't keep. So Rav Yosef says, what are you talking about? Rav Yosef, my craw. Rabbi Yossi says, where's the pasuk for Baal Pasha, as I added in the brackets, last sorely showed? Where's your biblical source? Where's your anything? To which he quotes our sentence from Mishlei. Al tomar l'recha lech v'shov u'machara tein v'yeshitach. Don't tell this fellow, go, come back, when in fact you have the money for him right now. So what this Gemara is telling me is that our sentence in Mishlei that said, don't tell him, come back tomorrow, that's what you're violating the longer you hold it. So there's an initial prohibition, and then there is an extended later prohibition, after that initial time. Clear so far? Now I come back to Gerald's question. Gerald asks, well, this is from Proverbs. What's your source in Proverbs? What does that mean? So source Gimel is a comment from the Meiri. Okay, the Meiri writing in, I think it's the 14th century in Provence, makes a comment on our Gemara. He says, V'lav bal tasheh mi divrei sofrim eino zaz mimenu klal. He says, this prohibition of don't delay, don't keep the money with you, is a rabbinic prohibition. That's the way he's looking at this source in Mishlei. Now, the truth of the matter is that we could have a very long discussion about the status of verses in Navi. Whether, when you see something in Navi, is that, what exactly, how do I look at that? Is that like a De'oraisa? Is that like a De'Rabanan? Is it something in between? We usually call them Divrei Kabbalah. That's the usual term for them. But what Meiri here is alleging is that it's called a De'Rabanan in this case. There's a biblical prohibition against holding it the first day, and then there's a rabbinic prohibition against holding it on subsequent days. That's the way that the Meiri looks at it. And he says, that prohibition never leaves, meaning every time you have the opportunity to give him the money, and you don't, you're in further violation. And it's not based on the day or the morning. So imagine this scenario. At 11 a.m., I run into the guy. He says, where's my money? And I say to him, come back later. And at 3 o'clock, he comes back. And again, I push him off. Now I violate it twice. It's each time I do this lech vashuv thing, each time I push him off, I'm in violation. Now, there's a whole separate discussion we're not going to get to today about whether he's allowed to keep on coming back to me for money if I'm not paying him. And that depends. Lif Neiver will be an interesting problem. I was thinking along the lines of Lasi Yelo Kenoshe. You're not allowed to be too demanding with your borrower, but it depends on the circumstance. That we have to get to. We'll get to that next week or the week after, eventually. We're not there yet. But right now, what we're saying is, I'm not allowed to push off my creditor, and he continues, the Meiri still in source Gimel, the Remez Ladavar, he says, the hint to it is our sentence in Mishlei. Al tomar l'recha lech v'shuv u'machar etein v'yesh itach. He quotes our sentence from Proverbs, and he says that's just a hint to the idea. It's not really a source. This is really rabbinic. Hakol shalo hayolo litein eino over af mi divrei sofrim. The Meiri now adds a second point, which is, look carefully at that sentence in Mishlei. What does that sentence in Mishlei say is the condition for your violation? Under what circumstance? Read the sentence carefully in Mishlei. Under what circumstance have I violated this? It says, don't tell your friend, go and come back. Right? So the first point is, I'm only in violation if I tell him, go and come back. If I say something to him, u'macharetein, I'll pay you tomorrow. V'yesh itach. Means, and you have it with you. Meaning, if I don't have the money, I'm not in violation. It's not good because I didn't keep my word, and we've learned that you're obligated to pay on time, but I'm not violating this. This is a prohibition that is specific to the case in which he actually has the money to give. Okay? That's all the outside sources that we need in order to prepare ourselves to read the Pesach Choshen. So take a look now in the Pesach Choshen, and we're looking at Siv Tes Vav. It's the middle of the page. I still have this one. Yep. We are smack in the middle, really. It's about 12 to 15 lines down the page for the optimists, about 12 to 15 lines up from the bottom for the pessimists. The Shulchan Aruch Siman Tzadi Zayin Sif Gimel, he tells you that his source for saying that you're not allowed to hold on to this fellow's money is a line in Shulchan Aruch, which he references there, but I didn't bring it in because it's the same wording. Va'over alav midivrei kabbalah. The wording that he uses here is that you're in violation of a prohibition from divrei kabbalah. Divrei kabbalah is the word we usually use for navi, higher than calling it a derabanan. V'lechora mashma. She'ena over elim kein docheyu balech vashuv. He says it sounds like you're only in violation if you say to him, go and come back. And then he says in parentheses, the kol shekein kishomer she'ena rotza lifrak the muchuch begemara. He says, and certainly you'd be in violation if the guy came to you to pay. Right? The guy came to you asking for his payment and you said to him, I don't want to pay. So you'd be in violation then as well. You didn't say, I'm going to pay you tomorrow. You said, I'm never going to pay you. So you're in violation then too. But now he gives you the first of several exceptions we're going to see. We're going to see three exceptions. He says, what if you don't push him off? Ela mishtamet ba'ofen acher. But rather, you duck him in some other way. So he comes knocking on the door, and you don't answer the door. He calls, and you don't answer the phone. So ain't over. Then you haven't violated this, because you didn't say anything to him. Strictly speaking, based on this pasuk, it's only because you told him, go away and come back tomorrow. That's what created your violation. Ve'od mashma she'eno over ela k'sheyesh lo b'melefroa. Second exception, and he says, v'kach kasav ha-me'iri behedja, he gives you a second exception, which we saw directly in the Me'iri, that you're only in violation if you have the means to pay, and you don't do so. If you don't have the means, you're not violating this rule because you're not holding on to his money. You follow? So two exceptions to the rule. Except we're going to see a third in a moment. But the first exception is if you duck in some other way. Telling him lech vashuv is the problem. Telling him go and come back is the problem. I want to come back to that because I don't understand that yet. And then second, if you don't have the money, you're not going to be liable. Okay. He then continues to quote the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. He says, Kasa b'Shulchan Aruch Harav, she'eno over, ela kishemiskavein lidchoso. He says, the violation is not in failure to pay. The violation is if you intend to stall. That's why you're doing this. As opposed to what? Why else might you not pay somebody back on time? Besides, you know, when you have the money. Why else besides I want more time might you do this? But that's also I want more time.
You don't like the guy. You want to just...
Okay, I didn't think about that possibility. Okay, you don't like him very much. You should have taken a loan from him. What else?
You feel he owes you something?
Maybe. Well, that would be under I don't have the money. I'm busy. Guy comes to me and says, pay me. I say, you know what? I have all these customers. I'm busy right now. Come back later. Have I violated the prohibition? What would you say? You say yes. Okay. Why? It's fine to say yes. I just want to, what's the logic? Right. It fits the wording of the sentence. The sentence in Mishlei says, don't tell him, go and come back tomorrow. When you have the money. And that's exactly what's going on. So it would appear. Take a look at what he says here. The Shulchan Aruch Rav says, you're only in violation if you intend to stall. Aval imhu tarud. But if the person involved is busy, he's distracted. Vein lo p'nai achshav. He doesn't have the time right now. Rashai lomar lo. He's allowed to say, lech v'shuv la'achar zman kishayihya li p'nai. You're entitled to say, I'm busy right now, go away and come back when I have time. He says, you're allowed to say that. That's not called a violation. I suppose the way he'll read the pasuk is, v'yesh itach doesn't just mean because you have the money with you, but you also have the time to be able to provide it. It's both. It's not just that you have the cash.
There's a way of wording it too. When you just say come back when I have time, it sounds like you're putting it off. Mm-hmm. You say come back at 3:15 because then I'm able to see you. That's already making an appointment.
Interesting. It's certainly better as a you know, from a business perspective for you to say, yeah, you're picking the time. Yeah. Right, but telling him specifically, I close at 5 or something like that would be better, just, you know, from a relationship perspective, from an ethical perspective, and from a responsibility perspective, it makes sense for you to give him a particular time. True. But what we're going to need to figure out is why this is true. Why am I distinguishing between where I stall him because I don't feel like paying him and when I'm stalling him because I'm busy with something? Ultimately, from this fellow's perspective, I owe him money. He lent me money. Why does it matter why I'm stalling him? Whether it's because I'm arbitrary, mean, angry at him, or just, you know, really busy. It doesn't matter. He's not getting paid right now. So we have to figure out what's going on here. But keep on reading first, and he'll explain how we get this idea. Where does this idea come from? That if you're delaying because you're busy with something, that you're not in violation. He says, "Vahumi divrei haShulchan Aruch." He says, "I'm quoting you the Shulchan Aruch on this." Siman Shilma Metesiv Zayin Gabi Schar Sachir. The Shulchan Aruch makes this comment regarding another issue of delaying payment. The case of a worker. What happens if somebody is working for me? We mentioned it already with that pasuk of Lo Salin Pilat Sachir, right? If somebody is working for me and he's supposed to be paid that evening, I'm in violation if I delay. But I'm not in violation, he says, if the reason I delay is because I'm paying 100 other people, right? It's the time for everybody to come to the window, and I say to him, listen, I got to take care of these people, come by after them. Then I'm not in violation of that either. Where does he get it from? So the answer is, take a look at Source Dalet. How do I know this rule? It's from a weird story in Source Dalet. Source Dalet is the Gemara further along after Source Beis, actually. They're from the same passage. Tana Rabbanan, here's a brisa. Ha'omer l'chaveru tzei sechor li paolim. If I go to Gerald, I say, Gerald, do me a favor, hire workers for me. Alright? I told Gerald, do me a favor, hire some workers, tell them they'll get paid $50 a day, and Gerald goes out and he hires them. Comes the end of the day, they go to Gerald and say, "No, when are we getting paid?" Gerald says, "I don't know, I was doing this for Torchiner." Okay, go to Torchiner. Torchiner says, "Yeah, I'll get to it tomorrow." Who has violated Lo Salin? Who has violated the prohibition against delaying their payment? The Gemara says, Shnei Anein Ovrin Bishum Bal Talin. Neither of them has violated the prohibition. Why? Zeh Lefishal Oscharan. I didn't break it because I didn't hire them. Gerald hired them. Vizeh Lefishay Bilasa Watzlo. And Gerald didn't break it because they didn't do any work for him. So neither Gerald nor I have violated it. So Hei Chitami, the Gemara says, really? What's your case? If the story is that Gerald told them when he hired them, I am taking responsibility for your payment, then it's Gerald's responsibility to make sure they're paid. And if they're not paid on time, it's his fault. That's clear. It should be with him. Disanya, as a brisa in fact says, if you hire somebody to work in your field, but then, for whatever arbitrary reason, you point to somebody else's field to do the work. Then you are responsible to pay him in full, even if you told him go work in somebody else's field, because you hired him and you took responsibility. And if you want to get paid back for the work that they did in the other guy's field, you can go to the owner of the other field. That's fine. But the point is that Gerald is going to be chayav. Gerald is going to be liable to pay them if he took responsibility. So the Gemara says, "Lo tzricha damar luscharchem al abayis." So he says, yeah, that's true. The case in which neither of us is liable is the case in which Gerald did the hiring, but he told them that Torchiner is going to be the one to pay them. And then I delayed. Neither of us has broken the biblical prohibition. Still not a good thing to do. Do not try this at home. But neither of us has broken the biblical prohibition. All of that is by way of setting up this last line in Source Dalet. It's a one-line story. Yehuda bar Maremar, Amar le Lisham A, Zil Agir li Paolim. Yehuda bar Maremar hired workers. He told his servant, his assistant, go out, Zil Agir li Paolim, go out and hire workers for me. Ve'emalahu, and tell them, Schachem Abal Abayis. Tell them that the boss is going to be the one to pay you. So what it sounds like in this story is that Yehuda bar Maremar is setting up a situation in which he can delay payment and not be liable. Right? Instead of hiring them personally, And instead of having his assistant take responsibility for the payment, he tells the assistant, go hire them and tell them that Yehuda bar Maamar will pay you. So Tosfos, commenting on this Gemara, is really bothered. He says, what did you just do? Are you trying to tell me that Yehuda bar Maamar, who is a respected sage in the Gemara, is trying to cheat his workers? He is deliberately setting up a situation in which he can stall payment and not be liable? Is that where we understand this? The Tosafot says it can't be. Can't be. Well, then what's going on? So in Source Hey, Amal Hisham Ezeel Agarli Paolim, Tosafot says, Lo Mishum Shayadaito Lidchos. Not that he intended, hey, I'm going to push them off. Elahaya Yarei Shaloye Panoi Litein Lahem. Rather, it was because he was scared that he's going to get busy, and therefore he's going to end up pushing them off. And he's worried that he therefore might be liable. Vafilu mishum bal tashha lo haya over kevin shu asik b'malach acharis. And Tosus's concluding thought is he won't be liable for delaying payment because of this arrangement that he's made with his assistant, where neither of them is really liable, and he won't be liable for bal tashha either. This issue of delaying payment that we talked about, because he is busy with something else. Okay, so let's make sure that we get this, because we're following a little bit of a winding path here. The Gemara tells us, this last piece that we just saw, that there's a way to evade responsibility for the obligation to pay your worker on time. Yehuda bar Maamar created such a situation. Tosafot says, how did you do that? You're not allowed to do that. That's bad. And Tosafot says, you're right. That wasn't what was going on. Rather, he was worried that, not that he was intending to do this, but he's worried that he might get distracted and might not pay. So he said, I'm scared I might come to violate a biblical prohibition. So let me avoid the problem by structuring it in this way. Not that he intends to take advantage, but he's trying to insure himself against disaster. And what Tosafot says is, he won't be in violation now of the biblical prohibition because of the way he structured the deal. And he won't be in violation even of a rabbinic prohibition of Baal Tashhed that we've been talking about, because his reason for delaying is not because he just wants to stall, it's because he's busy. That's the source. That explanation of Yehuda bar Maamar is the source for the idea that if you delay payment, not arbitrarily, but because you were busy, you're not in violation of the law against stalling, the law of Baal Tashhed. So that's where Shulchan Aruch gets the idea that if it's because you are busy, then you are not in violation of the rabbinic prohibition. Are we clear? Sort of clear? Okay, at least sort of. That's the idea that Tosos presents, which the Shulchan Aruch adopts, and which the Shulchan Aruch Harav adopts, and which gets quoted here. So the truth is, we have to confuse you with five more lines in order to conclude this thought, but I want to pause here for a minute. You're now telling me there is a biblical prohibition against delaying past the first morning, right, when you're dealing with employees, and we apply that to loans as well. There's a separate rabbinic prohibition against telling the guy, go, come back, when in fact you have the money to pay him. However, you're not in violation of this rabbinic prohibition if the reason you told him that was because you were busy with something, right? Or you didn't have the money, right? Or if you avoid him in some other way, like by not answering the door, right? Then you didn't violate the rabbinic prohibition. So what exactly is the nature of this rabbinic prohibition? What were the rabbis trying to prevent here with this prohibition that you can so easily avoid?
Deliberately raising expectations only to slash them. Something that just deliberately keeps saying, come back.
Exactly. Exactly. What it sounds like here is that what we're talking about as a rabbinic prohibition is not simply delaying payment. Delaying payment's not good, but once you missed your time, you already broke the law. That's over. What we're now trying to prevent is bad social relations, in which you go to somebody who lent you money and you say, come back at 3 o'clock, when you could have paid him right now. That's the problem. It's a social prohibition. It's not an economic prohibition. It's a social thing. It's the way you relate to other people. It is worse for me to answer the door and say to him, no, come back later, than it is for me to not answer the door at all. It causes perhaps greater frustration and anger on the part of the lender. And so, in the event that the reason why I stall is because I'm busy, right, he can look at me and see, I'm handling stuff, I don't have the time right now, that's not as bad. As opposed to, here I am sitting in my armchair, I've got the money, and I simply say, yeah, I'll take care of it later. That's aggravating for the guy. It's a social gezeira. It's because of poor relations with this with the other party. I believe that's what's going on here. Yes?
That just doesn't make sense. I mean, I have trouble with it because anyone can say they're busy.
Right. So anyone can say they're busy. But here's the funny thing about this prohibition. It's really not between you and the other person to decide whether you have violated or not. Right? It's up to God. So, you're right. If this person says dishonestly, I am busy, then he may get away with it in terms of how he deals with this person. But Hashem knows. Yeah. And that's true for many financial laws. Okay. Now we have to get to the Tosfos HaRosh, who presents a different perspective on this issue. If you take a look at Source Vav, the Tosfos HaRosh, he says, I have a different explanation for what's going on with Maremar. When Yehuda bar Maremar said he wanted to structure the deal in such a way that he wouldn't be liable for Lo Salin because the worker hired them and the worker said that he was going to pay him and so on. So take a look at Source Vav. Emelu Scharchem HaBalabayis, tell them that the boss is the one who's going to pay you. It's not that Yehuda bar Maremar intended to stall them, right? The same way that Tosfos said. Remember what Tosfos HaRosh is. I should take a second to explain that. Bless you. Tosfos are sets of commentaries written by scholars in France, Germany, England, call it basically very end of the 11th century through the 13th century, right? Rashi's grandchildren are the most famous, but there are many, many others. That's one group. The Rosh comes along slightly later, end of the 13th century, beginning of the 14th, and he writes commentaries of his own on the Gemara. Some of them are halachic, where he takes the passage in the Gemara and makes a halachic commentary, and that's what's printed in the back of a standard Gemara. That's what's called the Rosh in the back of the Gemara. But then he also has Tosfos-style comments, which quite often overlap with and explain Tosfos, and that's called Tosfos HaRosh. So that's what we're looking at here in Source Vav. Tosfos of the Rosh. And he says there, Ve'emelu scharchem abalabayis, Yehuda bar Maremar said, tell them that the boss is going to pay. Ve'lo mishum shayrotza choso, not that he wished to push off the worker. Da'alachola pachos bal tashe ika, kevin de mechuyav litein lo scharo. The Tosfos HaRosh says there would be a violation of bal tashe if he delayed. If he delayed paying. He was worried, though, that he might be so distracted. And therefore, even Baltasha would not apply, like Tosfo said. But then he offers another approach. You know what? He says, I'll offer you another possibility. Another possibility is that if you're busy, you're still in violation of Baltasha. Being busy is not an adequate excuse. Well, then wait a minute. Then Yehuda bar Maremar is still going to get into trouble. Yeah, you're right. He was avoiding the biblical prohibition, not the rabbinic one. The way he structured this deal would save him from the biblical, but it wouldn't save him from the rabbinic one. So Tosfos HaRosh entertains the possibility that Tarut is not really an adequate exception. Are we clear? Gerald, you with me?
Yep.
Okay, so now look back in the Pesach Choshen, where he says in the middle of the line, Ubatosfos HaRosh Sham, about 13, 14 lines up, Ubatosfos HaRosh Sham Kasav Teretz Acher Lekushas HaTosfos. The Tosfos HaRosh offered a different answer. Right? The answer that you are in violation of Bal Tasha if you delay. Ulefize, and according to this, Efshu Sha'over Avkishein Lo Pnai, it is indeed possible that one is in violation even if he has no time to pay. He's still in violation. He's still stalled. U'midivrei Shulchan Aruch Harav mashma she'af lechatchila muter lidchosok she'ein lo p'nai. Whereas the Shulchan Aruch Harav, following the view of Tosfos, says no. You are allowed to stall the guy when you have no time. The assumption of Tosfos is Yehuda Bamaremer does not intend to violate a prohibition. But then he says one thing remains. You do have to examine Ad Kama Mutar Lidchoso. Right? This is the last point you have to see within this piece. How far can you push this? Meaning, even if you're going to tell me, the way Tosfos wants to say, that if you're busy, you're not in violation of Baal Tashe, the prohibition against stalling. Even if that's true, how long can you push somebody off before we say, come on, that's just ridiculous? Right? How long can you say, I'm sorry, this just doesn't fit the top of my priorities and I have to take care of everything else first? Because everyone is busy. Everyone has things they need to do. There's no one, very few people certainly, who sits down at some point and says, gee, I have nothing on my list of things to do. So how long can you keep on shoving this down your list of priorities? So that's the question he asks. Ad kama mutar lidchoso? How long can you push this guy off? There's another guy here in this equation. Because you don't have time, this other fellow has to wait forever to get paid, either the lender or the employee, because you're busy. So he quotes the Nesivos HaMishpat, the commentary to Shulchan Aruch, to the financial section of Shulchan Aruch, the Hoshin Mishpat, Rabbeinu Yaakov Lorberbaum of Lisa, I believe is his name. Kasav, he wrote, Shekeshaloka Eino Bebeso, Kofin Oso Lachzor Lebeso Velifroa. His position is that if the borrower is away from home and the money is at home, we force him to go home and get the money and pay. And if he says, well, I'm busy, and there will be a loss for the borrower if you force him to go home because he's involved in his business. And now he's going to lose money by going away from his business to go home. Then we'll give him some time. Nos nilos man beisdin lamed yom. Beisdin will give him 30 days. 30 days is the max. That's the idea. So what we've seen are two prohibitions involved in delaying payment. Number one, the biblical one, which you're in violation with end of the first day, right, with mourning. That's Baal Talin. As well as, we already mentioned what we saw weeks ago, the mitzvah of paying on time. Then there's a second rabbinic prohibition against making this guy feel bad, that you're telling him, go, come back later. It's social rather than economic. And now we're going to see in the last couple of lines here a third level to this. Okay, there are four altogether. We're not going to get to the fourth today, but we'll get to the third. It's eight lines up from the bottom, middle of the line, the big word umnam. Umnam, however, he says, Habach sof sim lamed ches kasav shakovei azman lahalva aso v'avar azman v'lo pra'o hu bichlal gozel es chavero. He says, if you have set a time to pay somebody back, and the time goes, and you haven't paid him, you know what you're guilty of? Theft. You're stealing. Because there's value to this money. Right? What do we call that? Inflation, for one thing. Opportunity cost, for another. Every day that I don't pay him back is a day that he could have invested the money and lost all of it. No, a day that he could have invested it and made some money on it. He could have traded, he could have done something with it. And that was being withheld from him. How do I know that there is a particular value you can put on that? Well, nowadays, there are studies about this. Nowadays, there are analysts, and they'll tell you what the opportunity cost is and so on. For us, we have a Mishnah in Makos. It's Sor Zion. Mishnah in Makos is talking about Edim Zomimin, witnesses who plot to incriminate somebody falsely, and their liability is to pay the person, right, for what they wanted to cost him. So take a look in Sor Zion. Mi'idin anu bi'ish ploni shuchayev l'chaveru elev zuz, almanaz litno lo mikan vashloshim yom. people testified falsely against Michael. I'm going to pick on Michael for a moment. Okay, it was false. But they testified falsely against Michael, saying that he owes Gerald 1,000 zuz, and that it was to be paid in the next 30 days. Now, the lie was not about the 1,000 zuz loan. The lie was about the time frame. V'hu omer mikan ve'ad eser shanim. Michael says, no, it wasn't a 30-day loan. It was a 10-year loan. So therefore, they were cheating him of 9 years and 300 and something days, depending on lunar year, solar year, leap year, whatever it is. But they were cheating him of 9 years and something. So, omdin, we evaluate, kama adam rotza liting, v'yehye biyado elef zuz, what we do is we evaluate the following. Let's say you are faced with a choice. You could borrow 1,000 zuz. And there are two possibilities. Either you can borrow it for 30 days, or you can borrow it for 10 years. How much money would you pay to be able to borrow it for 10 years instead of 30 days? And that's what we evaluate opportunity cost, what they cost him, right? It's whatever it was worth then. If it would have been worth, I don't know, $100 for you to be able to get the longer term loan, right? It's sort of like what we do with mortgages, right? When a person takes out a mortgage, so not in Canada, because Canada, you have all these laws about, you know, no term being longer than 5 years. You can't lock in your term. But in the U.S., you can lock in a 30-year mortgage, right? And that means your rate will not change for the next 30 years. The downside of it is that because the bank knows that they're not going to change this for the next 30 years, no matter what happens to interest rates, they're going to charge you a higher rate. Right? If you ask for a lock-in for 5 years, they'll give you this rate. If you ask for a lock-in for 30 years, they're going to give you double that or whatever it is. You follow? There's a cost involved in getting a longer-term loan. So that's what this Mishnah is trying to tell me. The upshot for us is there is a value in being able to take a longer-term loan, right? There's a value in being able to get a longer term, and that's what we call the opportunity cost. That's the idea. And the Bach quotes this in Source Ches. To make a long story short, because otherwise we will not finish what we need to finish, he quotes this principle and says that if somebody holds somebody else's money, he doesn't pay back on time, he is guilty of stealing the opportunity cost from the other person. That's called gozel es chavero. And so, going back now to the Pesach Choshen at the bottom, he says, the Bach says, it's gozel es chavero, kamo shematzino b'mishna perakama de makos. We are now at the beginning of the line, 6 lines up from the bottom. Shamtanas mos shvei kesefu. Because holding on to somebody else's money itself is something valuable. V'l'chora mashma shafilu eino docheu b'lech vashov. And he says, this is now the Pesach Choshen talking, he says, even if you don't say to him the social thing of go and come back, even if you didn't do that, even if you don't have the means to pay, nonetheless, you're violating the prohibition. Because this is not a social prohibition. This is an economic prohibition. I'm holding the opportunity cost. So the upshot of all of this is, we now have identified 3 separate prohibitions. There's the initial one of bal talin, right? Don't hold the guy's money. That's number one. Number two, there's a social prohibition. Don't say to him, go back, go away and come back later when you actually have the funds. And then, there's an economic prohibition of gozel es chavero, of stealing the opportunity cost. And that stealing of the opportunity cost applies whether you have the money or not, whatever you say to him or not, whether you answer the door or not. It doesn't make a difference. You follow? Those are 3 different prohibitions. We did not get to a 4th one called Bal Ta'ashok. God willing, we will get to that next week. Shkach.